I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a new report seems to confirm what we already expected, that the city of Seattle never intended to honor religious exemptions for the vaccine. Plus, the state of Washington has defunded a care facility that takes care of newborns that have been exposed to drugs. Yet at the same time, the state somehow has money to continue to pay for laser hair removal and boob jobs for transgender inmates. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. One housekeeping note, we will not have a show tomorrow. I'm going to be over in Spokane talking about the state's terrible energy policy with our friend Brian Haywood. So we will not have a live show at our regular time or at all tomorrow, even at a special time. I'll miss you, but we'll still have an episode of Sundays with Subscribers, and it is going to be a good one this week. A topic came up that I guess I haven't thought about in a while, but it's still crazy that this is an ongoing dilemma. And there's, I think, a lot of pertinent things still about it, and that has to do with the vaccine mandates. So you guys will know that part of my red pilling had to do with the vaccines and the pandemic and our coverage when I was in mainstream news of everything that was happening in Washington state. And one of the things specifically was the realization fairly quickly that the vaccine wasn't going to be what it was promised as being. It was not going to get us out of the pandemic. It was not going to stop people from contracting or spreading the virus. Once there was that very clear realization, I noted, and I've talked a lot about since, the fact that our elected leaders didn't walk away from their vaccine mandates. It took a long time to stop firing people over the COVID vaccine. And there are dedicated public servants across state and local government that lost their jobs over it, lost their jobs over a vaccine that wouldn't have protected them and the people around them as it was promised it would. So, you know, you would think, and I think in order to gain any semblance of trust back from the populace, in the event there truly is a serious pandemic that's upon us again, I've always said, like, they just need to be honest. They have to have a mea culpa moment, come back and say, we were wrong about X, Y, Z. We apologize. We want to make people whole again, because that's the right thing to do. But they haven't done that. Governor Inslee never did that. Mayor Jenny Durkan in Seattle never did that. And so many other Democrats across the country never did that either. So our friend Ari Hoffman has a very interesting story. I can't say it's a surprise. First of all, I think we kind of knew this. And certainly those of you who were forced into vaccine mandates and who sought exemptions experienced that those exemptions rarely ever meant you got to keep your job. So I think this story confirms what a lot of us already knew to be true. So it's in the Post-Millennial. I highly recommend you go read it. The headline, exclusive: Seattle officials had no plans to honor religious exemption on COVID vax mandate and ignored fake vax card allegations. So I'm going to get into some of the meat of this because there's really two elements to this. And again, we're supposed to believe at the time that this is all happening that the pandemic like poses a threat to life as we know it, right? Because that's what elected leaders in cities like Seattle and in states like Washington are leading us to believe. And we're supposed to believe that the reason they're pushing the mandates, right, is because they believe it'll save lives. And they believe that's the path back to business as usual. That's what they're messaging, right? I know it's been a long time, but I think we can all remember that that was the message. And it was a message of shaming. You know, we were all, and I got the first dose of the vaccine, so don't come after me with the anti-vaxxers. I wish I hadn't. I think Nicole was smart enough to avoid it, right? No vax in your blood, Nicole?
No, I do have the Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, you do? Oh. Just so the Johnson & Johnson. She wasn't smart enough
to avoid it. I wouldn't do new science.
Avoid it. Got it. Okay. I thought your blood was clean.
Well, I think it is from the Johnson & Johnson.
Nope, never clean. Nope. So we were led to believe that this was like a life or death situation. And that's the only reason that they would hang people's jobs over their heads, especially people like firefighters and police officers, which is like, we definitely needed them during that period of time. We had shortages in the fire department, in the police department, the summer of love, and all the rioting continued for a good year and a half. And so, oh my gosh, the only reason they would fire these individuals is because not getting a vaccine was such a severe thing, right? So with that in mind, let me read from this article from Ari Hoffman. At the center of the controversy is an October 13th, 2021 meeting of Seattle department heads in which Adrienne Thompson, then a senior advisor to Mayor Jenny Durkan, reportedly told department leaders that the city had no intention of approving religious accommodations, despite a public process that suggested otherwise. Lombard's email documented the meeting for the sake of a paper trail and was later used as key evidence in lawsuits against the city, including Collins v. Seattle and the ongoing federal case, Vail v. Seattle. In text messages, Walsh, a whistleblower, and Lombard referred to the email as a legal torpedo against the city's defense. Walsh, the whistleblower's 2022 sworn declaration called the city's accommodation process a sham, alleging that leadership had predetermined the outcome long before any employee applications were submitted. Firefighters and other workers who sought religious exemptions said they were misled into believing their requests would be fairly reviewed. So, in a nutshell, basically there was a meeting of Seattle officials, including representatives from the mayor's office and the fire department. And it was said, according to a whistleblower, verbally in that meeting, that religious accommodations were never going to be honored. They didn't want to put that specifically in writing, but it was made very clear that they did not have any intention of honoring religious accommodations, despite the fact that they were actively and publicly leading firefighters and other employees to believe that religious accommodations would be offered. And you might say, well, if it's not in writing, this whistleblower could be making it up. But consider the fact that no religious accommodations were granted in the sense that people got to keep their jobs. So it's fairly clear that they weren't going to honor religious exemptions, and they had no intention of honoring religious exemptions. In fact, there was a part of this article that said that they made it clear the city's position was to deny all accommodation requests unless employees could fully isolate themselves from others, fully, in private life and public life, which is a virtual impossibility. So it was basically setting some impossible standard so they could deny every single religious exemption slash accommodation request. Now, what's interesting about this? Because we kind of know, right? And we suspected some of this. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say, well, they really believed that they were saving lives and that just because a person had a religious accommodation didn't mean that they were any less likely to get COVID or spread COVID to other employees. So they just simply couldn't grant. We can't grant an exemption. We can't grant an accommodation because this virus is far too serious. And sucks, but that's just the reality of the situation. Except there's this wrinkle that Ari reports out. Despite the internal directive, the city made no public announcement that it had adopted a blanket denial policy, raising questions about potential civil rights violations under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Even more troubling is this. What happened when department leadership was told fake vaccine cards were being used to circumvent the mandate? Lieutenant Lance Fisher, a plaintiff in the lawsuit and a longtime firefighter, told investigators that he personally informed Fire Chief Harold Scoggins during a March 2022 Laudermill hearing that fake CDC vaccine cards were being submitted by employees. Fisher recalled telling Scoggins, "It's known that people are submitting fake vax cards. What are you going to do to verify the authenticity?" To which Scoggins responded, according to the official investigation, quote, "It wasn't his problem." So think about that for a second. I don't know about you, but when I got my first dose of the vaccine, I got it, or maybe it was the second one, from Seattle firefighters. I went to some vax setup pop-up thing on Lake Washington. And that's where you would get these cards where they would fill it out. So these Seattle firefighters, if they chose to, they had access to blank CDC vaccination cards. They really didn't have to put in much effort to be able to falsify a vaccine card, which I wouldn't blame some of them if they decided to do this. But what's interesting about this is there is ample evidence that the fire chief and the city of Seattle didn't care. They weren't going to put in any effort into determining the validity of the cards. So on one hand, they don't care if someone actually got the vaccine, as long as they have a vaccine card that says they did. But they care so much about people who want a religious accommodation because the virus is so deadly and dangerous that they had to fire them. So you can't have it both ways. Now, if the city had made no exemptions, no accommodations, had tracked down and terminated people who were submitting fake vaccine cards, and took it seriously every step of the way, there would at least be a consistent storyline that the city could stick to. But because, even when presented with evidence, there was evidence that these fake blank, I don't even know if they're really fake, they're just blank vaccine cards, were left just lying around in stacks at fire departments so that people could take it and fill it out for themselves if they wanted to. So that didn't bother the city. But we're supposed to believe the city thought COVID was so serious that they had to fire firefighters and police officers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then also, why make people go through the process of making a religious accommodation? If you never intended to honor it, why offer it as an option? Why make people jump through all the hoops of proving that they have deeply held religious beliefs that would preclude them from getting the vaccine if you never intended to honor it in the first place? And that's because, as we know, this was all for show. And it was about control. Let's be clear. This was about control. I remember Seattle Mayor Durkin making an offhand remark to me. I was just at the tail end of my time at Fox 13, and we used to do, to her credit, a weekly interview. She talked to me every single week during the summer of 2020, during the pandemic, and we'd make it a regular thing. And I remember her telling me offhand, before we were recording, basically, like, you don't want somebody working for the city who's not essentially going to, like, comply with something like that. So at the time, it really told me this was about obedience. It wasn't about whether they were really vaccinated. It wasn't about whether those vaccines would actually stop the spread of the virus, because we knew that they were okay with people submitting fake vaccine cards. And we knew, based on the fact that vaccinated people were still absolutely spreading and getting the virus, that it wasn't going to do that either. So the bottom line, it was about control. And I really still do believe for individuals who were fired over the vaccine mandates in Seattle and Washington State or elsewhere, specifically in the city of Seattle, if you just decided never to sue because you thought, what's the point? That's a very clear-cut, absolute path to a successful civil case. Offering a exemption you never intended to grant, denying them wholesale while you publicly stated that you were going to offer vaccine exemptions, and then behind the scenes, just brushing away very credible allegations that people weren't getting the vaccine, they were just using fake vax cards. So interesting reporting from our friend Ari Hoffman. I'm glad that he's stayed on this. And there are still lawsuits that are ongoing around vaccine mandates. It's insane to me the extent to which, you know, the pandemic and what happened in the government mandates has had prolonged and profound impacts on people's lives, even 5 years later. I mean, that's what one of the reasons I found the No Kings March so hilarious is you've got all the, first of all, there was a lot of vaccine COVID masks going on in the march 5 years later. But you have all these people who were militant about not only themselves following the COVID mandates, but I mean, shaming their neighbors, calling and reporting and snitching on their neighbors and businesses who weren't following the government's rigorous COVID mandates, 975 days of one-man rule in Governor Jay Inslee. And they welcomed that. They loved it. They loved being lorded over when it was their own party lording over them. But now they feel like President Donald Trump is lording over them and they have to take to the streets by the tens of thousands to protest it. It's just really fascinating stuff. All right, Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Rakedahl made an appearance on Fox 13 News yesterday that I just have to play some clips from. So he sat down with my friend Hannah Kim, and I think Hannah does a pretty good job. But you know, Chris, I think Rakedahl has mastered better than anyone the art of word soup. Like, this guy, better than anyone, can say a bunch of words that don't mean anything that sound good. It's insane. I mean, it's actually pretty annoying, you'll see it here. But I think he gets away with it, unfortunately. And he does this thing that I call talk you out of time, where you know you have like 10 minutes to interview him, because I've interviewed him before. Jay Inslee was very good at this. And it's like, okay, I got 10 minutes, so I know she's going to want to ask hard questions. So I'll spend like 5 minutes just blah, 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 with not a breath in the middle answering so that she can get fewer questions in. So I was glad to see that Hannah Kim asked him about the issue of trans athletes. And you know, what he would say to concerns that, very obvious concerns, that it's not fair for boys to play against girls. Here's a clip.
Some of those families with, you know, young female athletes would say that this is an equity issue, that it's not in the same playing field. So what is your response to those families?
Well, first and foremost, my job is to follow the law. So regardless of what I personally feel, which is an inclusive perspective, we should all follow the law. The federal laws allow us to build a state law on top of it. In other words, Title IX of the federal law said, hey, we need equal access to females. This was created decades ago. But then it said, states, you get to build some civil rights above that. And states like ours, in California, Massachusetts, states all across the country said when it comes to gender, it's about identity, not necessarily sex at birth.
Okay, first of all, you didn't answer the question. She's asking you what you would say to families and to young women who don't think it's fair, and you're not willing to actually answer that on the merits because you don't have a good answer for it. But he goes into this thing about it's about following the law, and in Washington state, this is the law. Right, but who passed the law? Democrats. What are you, a Democrat? If you wanted to, you could advocate for the law to be changed. The law can easily be changed. But you don't want to change the law. So he couches it all in, I'm just following the law, which is arguable considering that President Donald Trump has said that, and I get it, that this is going to be figured out in the courts, but certainly it's not federal law. But you're following this little weird state law you've crafted where you say boys can compete against girls and share girls' spaces, which is just odd. But again, not answering the question and also couching it in, this is about following the law when you can help change the law. So that's the question. It's like, okay, you're following the law, but what would you say to parents who want you to change the law, who think it's time to change the law in Washington state? Let's keep listening.
So I always try to put this in perspective for people. There's 5 to 10 athletes out of a million students in our state, right, who are participating as transgender athletes. Maybe they were born intersex. Maybe they went through transition.
Intersex.
So our message is we can do this. We've been doing this for 20 years without controversy until Donald Trump, where we accommodate the individual as best we can.
Wait, when you say intersex, what do you mean by that?
They are not born with biological male or female private parts. That is a small fraction of the U.S. population, but it's a very real biological thing. So when people run around and say, you're either a boy or a girl, there's actually a fraction of our population that isn't born one way or the other. And so we need to accommodate.
God,
that's just one
guy.
Category of transgender, of course. But I'm always trying to help people understand that nothing is black and white. It's always a little more complicated.
It's not. You're a boy or you're a girl. We're not talking about intersex people. And there's no evidence that any of those transgender athletes you mentioned are intersex. I've seen no sort of assertions of that whatsoever. You're talking about this absolute anomaly, really, in the human genome. And so he goes to that because it makes it almost more justifiable, but it is black and white. You're a dude or you're a chick, period. You were born a dude or you were born a chick. And yes, there are a few genetic anomalies, and that's not what we're talking about here. But he totally makes a point for us that I think is important to listen to. Can you play back just that little clip?
There's 5 to 10 athletes out of a million students in our state, right, who are participating as transgender athletes.
Five? Okay. I have no way of fact-checking that because, of course, student information is private. He says there's 5 to 10 transgender students participating in athletics out of a million in the entire state of Washington. So let's, like, throw them a bone and just cut it down the middle. So let's say there's 8, right? Don't you think it's odd, Chris Reichdahl, that 20% of them are state champions? Let's say it's 8. We know for sure that 2 of them are state champions. The one that won the meet in Kashmir, Washington, the Junior Olympics track meet. And then the one that just won, Nicole, do you have this? The one that just won the state title in the 400. So the natural question for Chris Reichdahl would be, hey, okay, let's say that's true. Let's just cut it down the middle. You say 5 to 10, let's call it 8. That would be 25%. Why are 25% of them so good that they're state champions? And of course, the answer to that is because they have a biological advantage. That's an extraordinary statistical anomaly, right? You have this tiny subset, 5 to 10 out of a million. But amongst those 5 to 10, 25% are the best in the sport that they compete in. Why? Because they're men, they're boys, and they have a biological advantage. And I just wish I could get Chris Reichdahl in front of us again to drill him down on that point. Do you or do you not believe that men have a biological advantage to women? Of course they do. And if he says no, okay, well then why are 25% of them state champions? Because that's like a statistical impossibility if they have the same physical abilities, right? The same athleticism. But of course, he'll never do an interview with us again, which is kind of a bummer. It's a crazy thing, and it's something that the media doesn't ask enough about. I am glad that Hannah at least broached the topic with him, because for whatever reason, mainstream media, they don't want to talk about trans issues unless it's like supporting trans people, right? They don't want to question radical gender ideology. They don't want to expose some of the radical gender lessons that are happening in schools. They don't want to talk about, because they don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, because they don't want to get the level of criticism that we get for talking about it. And I mean, Hannah couched her question with a lot of, it was like a 1-minute question. Oh, you know, a lot of parents will agree with you and all this stuff, almost trying to protect herself from any blowback for just asking what is a really, really legitimate question. But someone needs to, who is capable of getting in front of Chris Reichdahl, because he'll never talk to us again. Just simply ask him that. Why are 25% of them state champions? And it could be higher than that. It could be higher than that. I just don't know who the other trans athletes are. All we know are the ones who are exposed and put on the news, and parents take pictures of them or whatever it is. Because, I mean, I can look at someone and tell you if it's a boy or a girl, but contrary to popular belief, I'm not watching high school athletics during my free time. So speaking of that, the Supreme Court out with a huge ruling for those of us who are trying to push back against radical gender ideology. I think this is a big thing, because the most serious issue is the medicalization of children. Like, this athletic thing is bad. It just speaks to the craziness that has consumed the left. Boys in women's spaces and girls' locker rooms and stuff, that's bad. But it's the medicalization of children, removing healthy breasts or healthy testicles or whatever it is, because they've been convinced by a friend or a teacher or a parent even that they were born in the wrong body. So now we're going to, you know, make medical changes to them that will impact them the rest of their lives. And we've platformed detransitioners. That's something I'd like to see the mainstream media do. Platform some detransitioners. We've had some on recently who've talked about the lifelong consequences of being medicalized as teenagers. Not in the state of Tennessee. Supreme Court okays Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for kids, a setback for transgender rights. Okay, you can characterize it that way. It says, they called it a jolting setback to transgender rights. The justice's 6-3 decision in a case from Tennessee effectively protects from legal challenges many efforts by President Donald Trump's Republican administration and state governments to roll back protections for transgender people. Another 26 states have laws similar to Tennessee. So you've got about half the states in the nation who ban gender-affirming care, and they call it that. It's butchery. You have states that ban butchery for children. You're an adult, do what you want as an adult. So half the country is sane on this. Washington is not one of those states. We allow the butchery of children in the name of radical gender ideology. And so far, some of that has continued despite President Donald Trump's threats to remove funding from places like Seattle Children's Hospital, etc. So just a few moments ago, Governor Bob Ferguson came out with a response to the SCOTUS ruling. He says, as long as I'm governor, I will stand up for the civil rights of transgender Washingtonians. We're not talking about civil rights. It's not a civil right for a 14-year-old to get their breasts cut off because they think it'll make them a boy. Good God. As long as I'm governor, I'll stand up for the civil rights of transgender Washingtonians. I know that many are deeply saddened and angered by today's Supreme Court ruling. I am with you. But today's ruling does not change Washington's laws or the civil rights protections that we've adopted. I will fight for those protections. Again, you know, I will continue to underscore the disgusting nature of adults supporting the butchery of children And in the case of Chris Rakedahl, a grown man sitting there advocating for boys to beat girls in sports, for boys to take opportunities away from girls, for boys to be in girls' spaces like locker rooms. Think of how sick that is. Like a grown man trying to put men into women's spaces. It's crazy stuff. So I hope that the Trump administration, because of this Supreme Court ruling, will be even more emboldened to continue to put pressure on states like Washington to stop this disgusting practice. I have heard some headlines out of California recently that there are some individual hospitals. One particular gender clinic, I think it was in San Francisco, ended up just shutting down its wing that provided surgical interventions for minors. So look, you know, Europe is already ahead of us on this. A lot of countries have already banned this sort of stuff. I think give it 1 to 5 years and we'll look back at this as very Kevorkian stuff and just absolutely insane. But we will always remember the people who pushed for it. We will always remember the politicians who pushed for the mutilation of children in the name of radical gender ideology. And I've never said that if you're a teen and you want to dress like a boy and present like a boy and that's your thing, that doesn't impact my life. You know, I think that's probably bad parenting. But Lord knows when we were in high school, I mean, everyone was goth or you had, you know, girls who were tomboys or whatever it is. If you want to present more masculine or more feminine, but at the point when you start mandating that people call you by different pronouns, that you hide secrets about your gender identity from parents, and the state mandates that that's done, that everything is kept from you, that you're connected to gender hormones that stop you from having puberty through our public school system, which all of our tax money goes to, and then our tax money is funding institutions that carry out irreversible procedures on kids that many of them go on to regret later in life. Like, yeah, I'm going to have a problem with that. It's the right thing to stand up and push back against that. All right. Did the University of Washington lie to us when they said that they didn't know the identity of a protester pushing violent views against Jewish people and that at a graduation ceremony, the school just didn't notice this person who was holding up this sign on stage? Well, we have some evidence suggesting that, yeah, we were not told the truth. First, I keep encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Why? It's because, one, it takes a lot of stress off your plate when it comes to insurance, and two, you could save a lot of money. We just got a new listener comment from Jacob Miller. Hey, Brandy, my wife and I live in Spokane and listen to you because you're a voice of reason from the west side of the state, and we appreciate it. Not many places using facts these days. I come from a liberal family, and I'm even liberal in some ideas. But these days, after 14 years of business ownership in Washington, I lean more conservative. I'm really writing. I like that you led with a compliment, though. Thank you. Is this a spot for First Mark, or is it a spot to make me feel good about myself? I'm really writing because we recently changed our insurance over to your awesome sponsors at First Mark, and they saved us $600 plus on our home and around $2,000 a year for our family's cars. Love that. Love that. They were honest and easy to work with. My wife even knew our agent's mother from the past. You rock, and I apologize for the length, but we appreciate your efforts. Don't apologize for the length. I'll always read a compliment about myself, and I'll always read a positive story about First Mark Insurance, and we get so many of those. Literally today, you could take a step today. It'll take you 30 minutes. That will save you thousands, could save you thousands of dollars a year. Why not do it? Unless you're just overfloweth with money and you just love wasting money you don't need to waste on insurance. And if that's the case, do it anyway and then give us the extra money. That's fair. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. University of Washington, think you're trying to lie to us, but we're not so easily fooled. And we've got some great tipsters who will help shed light on things. So we've been tracking this story exclusively on the show. It started when we got a tipster who sent us a picture from the UW Law School graduation, and they were horrified. This person was allowed to stand on stage uninterrupted for like 10 minutes holding a sign that said, "You can't be pro-Palestine without being pro-armed resistance." So clearly encouraging violence against Jewish people specifically. And this person was just blown away because, you know, it's on stage. It's like a 4-foot high sign. its content is clearly problematic. I mean, I would be horrified. Anyone should be horrified by that. But if I was a Jewish student or family in particular. And then they said no one did anything about it. For like 10 minutes, this person just... So people had to get their diploma from law school, no less, and then walk past this sign, which is horrifying. So I want to remind you of the first statement we got from the University of Washington on this. They said they condemned calls for violence. The event continued without interruption. There was no audible response or reaction from audience members. Law school leadership on stage were focused on the celebration and didn't notice the individual. I want you to remember that line. Law school leadership on stage were focused on the celebration and didn't notice the individual. He goes on to say, and unfortunately, it took some time for event managers to be made aware of this sign being held up. The individual left when asked to leave. Nonetheless, it's deeply disappointing. We are working to confirm the identity of the individual who was responsible. Okay, remember that line too. We're working to confirm the identity of the individual who was responsible and will take investigative or disciplinary steps as needed. Interesting. So we did that follow-up on Monday's show with UW statement. Well, then we got a picture from another observer who had been at this law school graduation. And they sent us to it because they sent it to us because it directly contradicts what UW just told us in that statement. Let's take a look at this image. So this image is from the side. And one of the things that you can see, so I'm going to read this viewer who sent it to us, their explanation of what was happening. As all the graduates did, this graduate had her name read, received her degree, was congratulated by the dean, and then moved to the far right of the stage. Instead of exiting the stage like other graduates, she put on her keffiyeh, unfolded the sign, and proceeded to stand for several minutes. About 3 to 4 minutes in, it looked like what I believe was an employee of the school to the side of the stage did notice her, but did not interact with her. During the entire length of the graduates' protest, nothing was said or done to ask her to leave the stage, that I could see or hear. Names of graduates continued to be read, and I imagine a fair number of photos taken by family and friends of their loved ones graduating may have had the sign in the background. I would also point out, if you're watching in the picture, you can see there is a faculty member up on stage looking directly at her. Directly at her, and she's right in front of them. She's a couple feet away. In the first picture, I understand it's kind of hard to tell her proximity to the staff of the UW Law School on stage. But this points out that you can see her in her graduation garb. So, two things. When UW told us, let me read it back, that law school leadership on stage were focused and didn't notice the individual, that's a lie. We can see the guy looking right at her, and from this tipster, there was someone who off to the side of the stage noticed her and didn't do anything about it. And then two, we're working to confirm the identity of the individual who's... That can't be too hard. You've read her name out loud. And then she walked 5 feet and stood there. You gave her a diploma with her name on it. Which again, you read out loud to the whole crowd. What do you have to work to confirm? What are you working to confirm? So I'm sorry, we were lied to. And I even said the statement that they gave us over the weekend was nonsense anyway, because we didn't believe that they just didn't see a 4-foot-tall sign right on stage where students were walking after graduation. So that just didn't ring true to me. But now we can see photo evidence that it wasn't true. And that multiple people saw this individual, did nothing about it, and that they just called her name out loud so they knew exactly who it was. And I don't know what kind of discipline you can do because you already gave her a degree. So, you know, she pulls a stunt like that. You let her do it for 10 minutes, highly offensive to really anyone, but especially in any Jewish individuals. And then you send us some bullshit statement saying, oops, our bad, didn't notice her. We'll try to find out who she is. That's insane. So Nicole reached back out. God bless Nicole. To Victor Bolto with UW Communications. He sent us this response. As I said before, unfortunately, it took some time for event managers to be made aware of this sign being held up. The individual left when asked to leave. Federal privacy laws prohibit me from sharing information about any individual student records, but as I said before, in a situation such as this one, we will take investigative or disciplinary steps as needed. So Nicole doesn't answer a lot of Nicole's questions. For instance, wasn't there security at the graduation? Seems like that's probably something there should have been security at. Are they asked to remove these sorts of disruptors? Do you have a plan for that? Have you identified or contacted this person as a graduating student for the day? It doesn't seem as though it would take long to track them down. Will there be any consequences? They won't tell us any of that. And they won't acknowledge that, like, that first statement is just was total utter BS. So they knew the person was there. I imagine much of the staff agrees with the message that there needs to be armed resistance from Palestinians against Israel. I mean, let's play it through. You know, I like comparisons. Let's say somebody stood up and it was a Nazi swastika. And they stood there with a Hail Hitler. How many seconds do you think it would have taken to tackle them off stage? Two seconds? It's getting exhausting.
I mean, if it said Make America Great Again, I'm pretty sure they'd be tackled.
God. They would have shot him. They would have shot him. Make America Great Again, shot dead. No questions asked. And then retroactively would have revoked their law school degree. Just insane stuff. I don't like being lied to. And yes, it is a lie. I do consider it a lie. It is a spin that's so spinny, it's a lie. All right, I want to do a quick update on Cam Higby's case. So I'll play the video again. Cam is the independent journalist who was beaten outside the federal building over the weekend. Yeah, so it didn't take long for the attacker to be ID'd. There was a pretty good picture of him without a mask. So his identity was passed on to police. And Cam Higby, of course, had reported this assault to law enforcement. And the response he's gotten so far, I'll be honest, is pretty disturbing. Maybe not a surprise, but I think is a really scary place to be for the city of Seattle. He said, update on my case. The violent crimes unit was called earlier in the day. And we were informed that misdemeanor assaults are not pursued due to unwillingness from prosecutors and funding cuts. Seattle City Council, Mayor of Seattle, and city prosecutors have made it physically impossible for Seattle PD to effectively do their jobs, keep the public safe, and go after criminals. So just to touch on that, that doesn't surprise me. But knowing that, like, misdemeanor assaults are not something that prosecutors are going to take time pursuing. So again, we're getting into this situation where Antifa knows that there's a line it can walk right up to. Where it can vandalize, they can break things, they can harass people and light fires in the streets. Hell, they can even assault reporters. As long as it's not a felony assault. So, like some of the stuff that happened to me in Tukwila, you know, being hit and pushed. I mean, Tukwila's a different agency. But if stuff like that happens in Seattle, you can bet that there's not going to be any prosecutions. However, maybe because of the high-profile nature of this case, Cam added, the department was informed that a potentially deadly weapon was used in the attack, which this guy was wearing, we think, these gloves that are loaded with lead. And that explains, sometimes Antifa wears those, and it explains the dents that he was able to leave in Cam's helmet. So now it has been sent to the prosecutor's office as a felony. He says he has little faith in the Seattle prosecuting attorney who claims to advocate for victims. He said, when I was first filing my report, I was told that crimes related to protests are almost never prosecuted, which is true, and that these people are almost always allowed to go. I was told that there are only 9 detectives in Seattle. That's less than 1 detective per 100,000 people. I'm not sure about that statistic. I would have to double check on that because that seems very low, although it depends what specific unit he might be talking about. The Hoff father, Ari Hoffman, reached out for comment to SPD Today when he asked about Jeremy Calvin Lawson, who's the suspect, and whether he'd be arrested. He was told that it was, quote, too early to know if an arrest will be made. What do you mean it's too early to know if an arrest will be made? You know exactly who the guy is and where he lives, and you have video of him doing what he did. And it's clearly a felony assault, so I don't know why there would be any ambiguity about whether criminal charges would be pursued. But Cam says, you know, there is now a detective on the case. I do believe, because of the high profile nature of the case, that it will get the attention it deserves, but it shouldn't have to come down to the high profile nature of the case. Anyone who's assaulted in the city of Seattle, any innocent person who's hurt, beaten, whatever it is, deserves to have their case paid attention to by the police department. We shouldn't get special treatment. Cam shouldn't get special treatment because he's you know, an independent journalist all over social media. I shouldn't get special treatment. We should get the same treatment that all other citizens deserve to get. And that is that if someone hurts them, law enforcement has the green light to do what needs to be done to make sure that person is accountable for it. But again, if you're a left-wing rioter in the city of Seattle, and look at, I mean, just the video from over the weekend outside the federal building. I can count all of the criminal acts, like discharging a massive mortar in city limits, vandalism, like lighting fires on federal property. I mean, the list goes on and on. And there's been hundreds of crimes that have been committed by Antifa just in the last week, if not thousands. And we're supposed to believe that one of the most serious ones that's caught on camera, that you have all the evidence in, there's kind of a question mark as to whether there'll be any arrest in that case. So if Cam can't get an arrest in that case, with all the attention on that, what hope is there for anyone else who's victimized in the streets by this violent mob? And until the Seattle City Attorney and the King County Prosecutor start taking these cases seriously, there's not going to be any change. And it's another one of the reasons why I think that the feds should just come in and handle it. And then there's this, which I just had to note. So there's a box set up in Seattle right now, collecting dog poop to throw at ICE. It was shared on Columbia City Seattle page. Do we have one of these up yet in Columbia City? Yeah, collecting dog poop to throw at ICE. And I'm sorry, but you know what? They are going to throw that at ICE. You might think it's just kind of a joke, but who wants just a random box of dog poop if they're not going to do something with it? They're absolutely going to throw that at ICE. They were throwing urine at Christians on Capitol Hill. Urine-filled water balloons at Christians on Capitol Hill. They're going to throw that crap at ICE. Literally, that poop at ICE. These are the kind of people who we're talking about here. And they just get let off the hook. It's absolutely insane. So I'm hopeful. I am hopeful that Cam's going to get some justice in his case, because think of the message that would send. You can beat a journalist on the streets of Seattle so hard it leaves a dent in his helmet and nothing happens to you. Wild, wild, wild world we're living in. All right, coming up next, it's a heavy topic and it is a devastating topic. And it speaks to the priorities of Democrats in Washington State. Defunding a facility that helps babies who have been exposed to drugs while funding laser hair removal for transgender inmates. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com should be the first real estate agent you reach out to when you're looking to sell your home. By all means, reach out to a few. Ask them what they have to offer that others do not. Wes Jones will have a long list of things that his team at Wes Jones & Associates do that other real estate agents do not. Their listing boosts concierge service, I think, is at the top of the list, where they come in, they handle all the cosmetic upgrades, manage the projects. You don't even have to pay for it at closing. And that's because they want you to get the most possible value out of your home. And they know what's going to lead to that. They're not going to make you do things that are completely unnecessary or aren't going to add enough value to your home. And then Wes will start by giving you a free market analysis. And he's been doing this for a long time in Washington State. And so he knows the market like the back of his hand. And he's going to be an honest communicator. You know, he'll let you know how well your home is positioned on the market, comparables, all that stuff. And he's just going to hold your hand. Not literally, unless I guess you want him to hold your hand. He's a nice guy. I guess he'd hold your hand if you wanted him to. It's a stressful process after all. But he's going to walk you through the whole process, make sure that he's in touch every step of the way and that he's listening to all your feedback. And their marketing is also fantastic. I mean, go to sellwithwes.com and look at some of the listings that they put together and the photos and video. It's second to none. You're not going to see anything else like it. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, literally, not hyperbole. Democrats in Olympia are putting transgender prison inmates ahead of tiny drug addicted babies. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Yeah, this is a hard one to stomach. So we know, of course, Democrats spent themselves into like a $14 billion budget deficit because they spent money on all these wish list items for their cronies and their allies, dishing money out to the teachers' unions and for all of these things that aren't helping anyone, spending $1 million per person to get them out of homelessness because our programs don't actually work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they were in a $14 billion budget deficit, so they had to make some difficult decisions and cut some things. So one of the things they cut, this is so frustrating to me. So a little background here. When Dave Reichert left Congress, I want to say that was 2018 maybe. When he announced he was leaving Congress, I reached out. I was at Fox 13 at the time. I reached out to him and asked if he'd do an interview, a sit-down interview. And they said, sure, you know, he's got a pretty tight schedule. He's back in Washington State from Washington, D.C., but he's going to be down at the Pediatric Interim Care Center in Kent on such and such a day. Do you want to meet him down there and do an interview? I was like, that's interesting. What is this place? So I just thought, okay, I'm going to meet him at this care facility and we'll do this interview about why he's leaving Congress, et cetera. So we get there and I go in and here's Dave Reichert in this back room. He's got his wife there and he's holding this little tiny baby. This was the first or second time meeting Dave Reichert. He's holding this tiny, tiny baby. And it's in this beautiful room, like set up like a nursery, just a very calming environment. And he sits there and he proceeds to tell me all about this. It's short for PIC, this Pediatric Interim Care Center that he'd been part of and worked with for a really long time. And this facility is so, so beautiful and so wonderful. And they care so much about these babies that are born with drug exposure. So they're basically, I mean, they're drug babies. Some of them are born addicted to drugs and they absolutely need because their parents were using drugs, you know, during pregnancy. Their mothers were. So it helps and cares specifically for newborns suffering from drug exposure and tries to make sure that they're healthy and that they live and all this stuff. So hospital grade facility. So that's my first exposure to PIC. So PIC is one of the things that Democrats defunded. And you might think, well, they've got to cut somewhere. You know, maybe this facility can make up for those funds elsewhere in some other way. But I want to get into how really relatively little money we're talking about here and what I think the motive was. But first, Como News, credit to Como, did a story on this. They talked to PIC executive director and founder Barbara Drennan.
We're all worried about the babies.
Barbara Drennan is executive director and founder of PIC, the Pediatric Interim Care Center in Kent. But after 35 years of providing transitional care, helping 3,500 babies through drug withdrawal, and giving them a safe start comes an abrupt end to three decades of helping the helpless. Drennan said she just learned their contract with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families has been canceled. No contract means no newborn placement from the state.
When I got the letter, I couldn't talk for a little bit.
Yeah. So it's not just about the money. As part of being defunded, their contract has been canceled with the state. So even if we were to go in, and I think we probably could, raise enough money to compensate for the money the legislature took away from them, they don't have a contract with DCYF to be able to have these drug-addicted little babies sent to them for specialized care. So this from the Como News article. Drennan said over the years, the state legislature has funded nearly half of their annual budget. But this year's appropriation went from north of $700,000 to only $100,000 annually for the next 2 years, okay? She said lawmakers understood the value of PIC and voted to keep them funded. So there's a little bit of a process here. So they were getting more than $700,000, but lawmakers said, okay, we're in a budget pinch, so we have to cut that, but we want to give you something. We want to make sure you still have your license. So they throw them, you know, some pennies, $100,000. She and board president Eric Drever said they understood the initial cuts and the difficulty in balancing the state budget, but were stunned when at the last minute, the funding was slashed completely. They said it fell victim to Governor Bob Ferguson's partial veto power on the budget, where he struck down provisions that included funding for PIC. Drennan insisted for now it's not so much about losing the state funding as it is about the contract to have newborns placed by the state in their facility. She said without that link, they have no authority to accept babies at the Kent facility. Just think about this for a second. $100,000. I would give them $100,000. There are a million people who would step up to raise $100,000. We spend more than that, four times more than that, in our budget, providing gender-affirming care to transgender prison inmates. Murderers, in some instances, who all of a sudden go to prison and decide they want to identify as a woman, so the state pays for their breast augmentations. The state pays for their laser hair removal. The state funds an office of equity just to feel good to the tune of $16 million a year. They can find money for all of that feel-good stuff. They couldn't keep, Bob Ferguson couldn't keep $100,000 in the budget to take care of drug-addicted infants at a place that's been doing it for 35 years. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Is it because? I'm going to give you two options. Is it because of Dave Reichert's long connection with that facility? Because that popped into my head. And I wouldn't put it past Bob Ferguson to be that petty. Is it because his opponent for governor, in the race for governor, Dave Reichert, has long championed this facility? Now, I don't know if that's why. I would hope, beyond hope, that that's not why. Second option, the Keeping Families Together Act. We know that our state has done very little to protect children from drug addict parents. They passed the Keeping Families Together Act. We've had multiple instances where babies and toddlers were not removed from the home of parents who were known to be abusing fentanyl, which can kill a child in a tiny, tiny dose, just a little contact. I mean, there have been children recently who have died as a result of that. What was the state's solution? DCYF came out, did an interview with King 5 News, and said they'd be providing cost-free lockboxes to drug-addicted parents so they could just lock up their fentanyl when their kids were over, as if any of them are going to actually do that. So we have this obsession, Democrats do in the state of Washington, with keeping drug-addicted parents with the kids who they pose grave risk to, even with the babies who they passed these substances along to during their pregnancies. You'll probably recall the interview with State Rep Roger Goodman that he did. I don't remember if it was a King 5 or a Como interview, where he's talking about how they don't want to punish parents who expose their children to drugs and those kids die. We had on the mother of a child who she dropped off for a visitation at her daughter's father's place, and her two-year-old daughter was killed by exposure to fentanyl. And for some reason, exposing your child to fentanyl isn't taken very seriously in the state of Washington, even if your kid dies. And State Rep Roger Goodman, a Democrat's like, well, we don't want to punish people for their addiction, even if their addiction led to the death of an innocent child. So, I mean, those are the only two. It's not a budgetary issue. It's not a budgetary issue. $100,000 you can come up with like that. Easy. You can take away the laser hair removal for the transgender prison inmates. Simple. So it's not a budgetary issue. So you have to wonder what else it is. And I really believe I gave you the two only possible options. If you can think of another option, tell me what it is. Either it's out of spite for Dave Reichert, like literally we'll let babies die out of spite. Or you'll let babies die because you are so obsessed with coddling drug addicts. Only two options. And meanwhile, so what happens from here? So there's still going to continue to be babies that are born drug addicted, right? This is the predominant facility where they've been going to that had been funded by the state. Specialty care facility. So what, is the state going to take more control over these babies? How is that going to go? Because we know that DCYF is a mess, and children who are supposed to be in the care of the state are dying left and right. There was an article out just as all this is happening from the Washington State Standard. Washington State lawsuit payouts skyrocket to more than $500 million in the past year. Claims against the state's Department of Children, Youth, and Families are driving a spike in the cases. So much negative stuff happening within DCYF to children who they are supposed to be looking out for, that we've had this massive spike in lawsuits. Washington's payouts, known as tort liability, have skyrocketed from $72 million in 2018 to more than $281 million last fiscal year. Nicole pulled up a bunch of headlines. These are fairly recent headlines about things that have happened to kids in the state of Washington that DCYF and the state were supposed to help with. No bed, no blanket. Social workers blow the whistle on Washington forcing foster youth to sleep in cars and offices as punishment. Two-year-old loses foot to lawnmower at daycare. DCYF revokes license. Gosh, maybe that daycare shouldn't have had a license in the first place. DCYF Oversight Board Chair seeks answers on foster youth punishment in Washington. Advocates want to change state law that makes it harder to remove kids from potentially dangerous homes. I mean, story after story after story after story. A baby left in a hot car died in Puyallup. Now lawmakers target Washington agency for negligence. Washington foster care parents say the state still hasn't fixed its investigative system. Case of missing Washington five-year-old highlights secrecy around CPS cases. I mean, absolutely insane stuff. It was interesting in this article from the State Standard. DCYF's public affairs director was trying to paint this as an old issue. Oh, all of these lawsuits, you know, we're paying all these out because these are from old stuff that happened like pre-2000. So yeah, it's old stuff. Some of these cases are originating from 20 plus years ago. Yeah, but as we can see from the headlines, a lot of new stuff going on too. A lot of problems with DCYF right now. And we're supposed to what? Hand more care over these drug addicted babies to DCYF? Because you didn't want to give $100,000 to a facility that's been dealing with it just fine? Absolutely insane.
It's also, yeah, it's also not, it can't be a bunny thing, because what will happen now is that hospitals will be forced to keep these babies longer. Yeah. And
who will have to pay the hospital?
The state will have to pay the hospital. Even more. And then they just won't have the love and like, you know, the attention that they get at this facility.
This facility is like a house. Mm-hmm. And it is a hospital-grade facility, but it's got all these adorable mm-hmm. little rooms, nursery rooms, beautiful places for these parents to still come in while the parents are trying to get better. You know, because the goal is to reunite families. I'm not saying keep families apart forever. Get the parent help for their drug addiction. Make sure the child is going to live that was born addicted to heroin or fentanyl or whatever it is. And when we were in there, there were some mothers who were, you know, working on themselves, and they were allowed, you know, in the facility, supervised, but sitting there, rocking their babies in these beautiful rooms. It's just insane, the priorities of Washington State Democrats. And maybe there is a third option. Maybe the third option is that they want to cut things like this that people are going to be horrified about so that they can have those headlines and justify more taxes. Mm-hmm. That could be an option too. Oh my God, we had to cut funding to this facility that takes care of little tiny babies that are addicted to drugs. So you know what? We have no choice. We just got to raise taxes. So they're that sick and twisted. So maybe that's what they're doing as well. Absolutely disgusting. I'm just like, I'm horrified by it.
I really think it should be, I said this before, but every press conference asked why babies cuts and not transgender inmate cuts.
Why are you keeping money for transgender inmates to have laser hair removal and taking that money away from a facility that takes care of drug addicted babies? Is that hard media? Just ask him that question. He doesn't have an answer to it. He does not have an answer to it. Absolutely insane. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. Another Democrat trying desperately for attention. First, everyone's heard of Doge, but have you heard of DOR? Stretch, the Department of Retirement Efficiency. Well, that's what you'll get at Bulwark Capital. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark, they are going to make sure that your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk. I mean, there's always some risk involved, right? But there are certainly varying levels of that. And if you have a passive manager and not an active manager and all this stuff with the tariffs and XYZ has been freaking you out, well, it might just be time to get a second opinion. And Zach can do that for you totally free. Just take a look at your allocations, hear about your retirement goals, and see if you're really on your way or if there need to be some changes. So ask Zach for a free portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. They'll go over your current allocations, and then they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. Good grief. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm sure some Democrats have got this directive to just cause a scene for attention and act like they're tough or tougher than Donald Trump, whatever it is, because you had that Senator Alex Padilla who burst in on a Kristi Noem press conference and she didn't know who he was. And he's like yelling and kind of storming the lectern, and he was dragged out in handcuffs. And then remember after that, he was like, if this could happen to a United States senator, it could happen to you. And my response was, I guess, are you trying to say that United States senators get special treatment or are above the law? Because I'm kind of confused at the point you're trying to make. Well, another Democrat who happens to be running for mayor of New York, he's the current comptroller, Brad Lander, he decided to do virtually the same thing. So there was this immigration hearing. And is this is audio? Is it just low? Immigration hearing. And he's attached himself to the immigrant in question. Will not, it is basically forming a chain. Here's ICE agents trying to get this guy. So they're warning him. If you interfere with this arrest, we're going to arrest you. He's, look at him. Look at him. He won't let go of this immigrant. So they,
please step back.
So yeah, they pry him off and handcuff him. He's very clearly interfering in a law enforcement action. So, like, what would happen if you or I did that? I mean, he's lucky, honestly, he didn't get, like, tased or shot. But, of course, this is, oh my gosh, this ICE is manhandling the comptroller of New York City, which is like, dude, nobody knows who you are, okay? Nobody knows who you are. Total bid for attention. But he, no charges, it looks like. There's not going to be any charges against him. Here's the governor of New York.
And that's when I got word of what had happened to my colleague in government, our comptroller, Brad Lander. The video is shocking.
Shocking.
I knew I needed to come down here immediately and check on his whereabouts and do what I could to intervene. I'll let Brad speak about his experience. To my knowledge, the charges, there are no charges.
There should be.
Charges have been dropped. He walks out of there a free man.
There should be charges. And then he got up. I'm not even going to play it because it's just annoying. And he's like, I was simply asking to see their warrant, and I told them I would let go of him when they showed me their warrant, and acting like he did nothing in the world wrong. I mean, think about it. Go out today while police are trying to arrest someone and just hold on to them and see what police do to you. And it was the same messaging. I'll play a little more of Kathy Hochul here.
Do you want to know what I really think?
Please.
It's bullshit.
Oh, wow. Now we're...
How dare they?
They started swearing a lot. Democrats.
An elected official who's been going down there for weeks to escort
How
people
dare
who
they
are afraid to walk
official.
Into a courthouse in the United States of America. Because despite them having legal status and following the rules and making their appointments, that they don't know what's going to happen to them. So Brad Lander has stepped up to be a guiding help for them. And this is what happens to him? What the hell is happening to this country? I just left Little Haiti. People are being traumatized. Small businesses, people walking down the street. When I was there in August, the streets were mobbed. People were walking down the sidewalks. There were vendors everywhere. The traffic was crowded. Today, there was silence.
Silence.
People are living in fear.
Well, are they legal?
A woman just told me the ICE agents are going in and out of buildings there. They came here with legal status. Temporary protective status was legal.
Temporary.
Tens of thousands of people came here with legal status, and it's literally ripped away from them.
Okay, first of all, if they have legal status that protects their ability to be in the United States, it can't just be ripped away from them. So we're not talking about that in these instances. And when you have temporary protected status, keyword temporary, it's not permanent. So the United States can decide that they're not going to grant you some sort of permanent residency. And that's within their right to do. And again, she stays at the beginning. How dare they grab an elected official? I guess I don't know. Is that you think it's good messaging that elected officials get special treatment? Senator Padilla? The comptroller who, like, nobody really knows? You're telling me they're supposed to get special treatment? Because I'll tell you what, that same thing would have happened to anyone else who did what either of them did. And the fact that there's no charges when he clearly tried to interfere with a police investigation is kind of special treatment. And this whole thing about people are scared, they're hiding. Okay, well, what are they hiding from? Okay, because if you're in the country, you're a citizen, you have lawful permanent residency, you have a green card, you have a student visa, a worker's visa, there's no problem there. Unless you're like fomenting terrorism on college campuses, then you should probably be worried about your student visa. So it's like, no, they're scared, and I get it, but that's of their own doing, isn't it? So it's just, it's insane. And I don't know, I think Democrats are really, you can see them grasping for a strategy, right? So I think there's kind of two things you're seeing. They're trying to be a little more edgy. You notice that? They're cursing a lot more, which is fine. I curse too. But I've always had a kind of a potty mouth. Like for them, it's brand new and you can tell. Like that one Oregon lawmaker who said the F word and then sort of giggled. It was like the first time she'd ever uttered it. But they're trying to be more edgy, right? Because the right has been all edgy and captured the culture. And they're trying to sort of put on this like fight mode, right? But to me, it just looks embarrassing. I mean, what I said after this video came out, when you play the, Nicole, can you play that video of the comptroller again? And you look at like how passionate he is about protecting an illegal alien. Imagine if Democrats were 1% as passionate as that of protecting U.S. citizens from criminals. Just 1%. Imagine if they were showing up to court demanding justice for American citizens who were victimized. Democrats would win every election. 1%. 1% of that passion and directed toward helping American citizens.
Step back.
So, I mean, I don't know who this strategy is working on. It's embarrassing to me when I watch it. It's just, I'm embarrassed for that. And I get it that he's in the middle of a race for New York City mayor. And doesn't that make it even more embarrassing that this is how you're trying to capture headlines? It's wild stuff. I'm curious what you guys think. All right, I've got a good daily subscriber show poll today. I feel good about it. So we are very close to closing in on the individuals who assaulted me outside the Homeland Security office in Tukwila on Saturday. Now, a couple of them, I think the cases are fairly severe. There's the individual who chased us with wasp killer, sprayed it in my eyes. That's a felony assault. And I am trying very hard, despite the fact that that individual had their face covered, to be able to get some sort of identifying video. We've done some public disclosure requests we think will be helpful in that regard, and so we're trying very hard. There's another individual who I plan to add to the case, who you probably saw her in the video, and she's dumping a full thing of what I assumed at the time, and I think it was water on my head, and I reached to grab her hand to stop her, and she hooks me in the face with her left. So those two individuals, like, there is nothing stopping me from, I'm full steam ahead on pursuing criminal charges against them. Now, there are two other individuals who were pushing up against me and hitting me with their signs. And I also, told Tukwila Police Department, I want to file charges against them. And I think we're pretty close to identifying both of them. Here was the question I posed to subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. I haven't looked at the results yet. I'm very curious how gracious you're all being today. I said, in the case of those two individuals who pushed up against me and hit me with their signs, which would be like a simple assault, right? Should I give them the opportunity when we identify them to publicly apologize in lieu of pursuing criminal charges? Yes or no? Nicole, should I show mercy? You're going to laugh at the results on Patreon. Mm. Should I show mercy against those two? And, you know, the guy screaming at me, the chick who hit me with her sign multiple times. If they publicly apologize.
I don't really care about the apology. I want them to come and have a conversation. So if they were willing to sit down and talk to you and try to make sense of whatever they think they believe. I like that idea.
Well, that's the producer's answer. Nicole's like, that would be good. That'd be good for the show.
Yeah. But no, I think they deserve what they... This obviously isn't their first time. Won't be their last time. Yeah. And they deserve what's coming.
And they were horrible, right? How lopsided do you think the poll responses are? Guess
I'm
going
to say most people say no mercy.
By how much?
70-30.
90-10. Yeah. 90-10 say no mercy, Brandy. Jenny, they need to face punishment or they will continue with what they're doing and probably escalate. Lisa, I love you guys. Hell no. Denise, absolutely not. You're not first person, nor will you be the last if they don't face any consequences. Also, a true apology comes from remorse. They have no remorse because they feel justified in what they do. Jeannie Carlson, these dummies need to face charges. We are seeing escalation in political violence. It needs to be dealt with. Besides, any apology would be insincere and an excuse to stay out of trouble. That's a very good point. David, heck no. It would be insincere just to stay out of jail. And I also tend to think that, I mean, they were so unhinged. You hear that guy like yelling at me and all this stuff. I don't think that that would be a productive interview with him. they need to go to jail. If they were capable of sorry, they wouldn't have done it in the first place. Now, to be clear, I don't think either of them will go to jail. I guess depending on their criminal history, but, you know, they'll probably have to, like, do community. So if we can figure out who they are, I do have faith in Tukwila Police Department that if we can get their identities locked down, that they will pursue something on it. I guess it would come down to whether prosecutors decide to do it as well. Rick, apologizing is too little too late. I love you guys. These Antifa slugs need to face real consequences, perhaps federal charges, and if convicted, a lengthy prison sentence. It's time to send a clear message to these domestic terrorists that there's zero tolerance for their crap. If those thugs assaulted someone in my state, which is a constitutional carry state, there's a good chance that they wouldn't be arrested because they would be in the morgue. Yeah. Antifa also carries guns, though. So if we defended ourselves lawfully, they'd still shoot us, which is sort of part of the problem, right? All right. Well, you guys have spoken. No mercy. There shall be no mercy. But it is interesting how many tips we get. Some I get like a picture sent to me and I know instantly it's not them. Others are really close. Or I'm like, okay, I need to find some more images of this person, you know, try to match tattoos and stuff like that. I do feel like we are honing in on not only the two sign individuals, but the woman who dumped the water bottle on me and then hit me across the face. But it's going to be trickier to get the blob who sprayed wasp killer on me.
Oh,
you know what I was
tricky.
Doing last night? I mean, this is how invested I am. Because, like, I'm not taking it anymore.
I know.
This is how invested I am. I was looking at old videos from, like, the other kind of riots and immigration disruptions, right? You're going to laugh. I don't even know if I should say this because it's so
dedicated.
Crazy. It's dedicated. So this person has a really unique body shape, right?
Yes.
Like very, I mean, it's absolutely like an obese white woman. That's the only, it's absolutely like an obese white woman. Big hips.
I heard everybody saying they did not think she was white.
Oh no, 100%. I've never seen a black, somebody, people were saying they thought she was black based on her voice. I've never seen a black woman with that body shape. This is like, totally white, I think.
Okay.
Maybe mixed, but.
Okay.
So whenever in the other videos I saw someone with a similar body shape, I traced it. I was like, trace it. And then I would take it and I would lay it over. I mean, that's not a bad idea though, right?
It's pretty good.
Because like, it is so distinctive. like the sort of front area and the booty area and the shape, the general shape.
Did that work? Did you find
some were pretty close? I have a couple of good leads because they've been involved in some of the other ICE stuff. So I'm like, this is not this first person's first rodeo. You don't come and the first thing you do is spray wasp killer in a reporter's eyes, right? That's not the first thing you do. So, and then you're looking at, you know, they're things that aren't going to change, you know, watches, bags, shoes, and you're looking for those items in other videos from other days to see if you can get them without their face covering on.
Right.
So yeah, literally I have a trace of a grotesque, I'm only being mean because they assaulted me, of a grotesque body shape. And I just take it, I just move it over others. And I'm like, nope.
That was at an ICE, a federal facility. So I'm confused why the feds aren't helping you look into this. I hope they are behind the scenes, and we just don't know.
Well, yeah, I guess it was in the grass in front of the DHS building. So right.
I mean, that they were there to, you know, go after feds, block feds. That was what they were doing.
Well, so. I know that I've put some feelers out to try to get the feds involved in this as well. But, you know, Tukwila PD was very, I mean, they took a report right away. And I have to update my report with them, send more pictures and video and stuff.
They don't
and
have
all
the
that,
funding that feds do.
They don't have the funding or the tools, that the feds do. I mean, I don't know. The feds might want to hire me if they figure out my...
They could probably just scan the eyeballs.
Look, at when they hear that I was tracing bodies and I have a stencil of the suspect that I'm placing over other individuals, they're going to be like, do you want a job as an FBI agent? I'm like, yes.
Or a Dateline producer.
I mean, you know, but we all have, like, even my body shape. Like, I'm sorry, if you can trace one, because this person's clothing was pretty tight up top.
Yep.
You can trace, bodies are unique.
They are.
You know, and so you can trace it and match it. I don't think it's that crazy.
Which other protest did you think you found her in?
I'm not going to say because I don't want videos taken down.
Okay. Okay.
But some others.
Okay.
Yes. Working on it. Anyway,
all right. I like it.
Am I crazy? Yeah. Yeah, I'm crazy. But I don't care. All right. What am I doing right now?
Talking about body shape. B-side.
Oh, wow. Yes. If you traced my body, it would be quite slender right now. But my curves are still intact. It would just look great. Much better than it did 2 years ago. I mean, look at that, right? Much better than it did 2 years ago. Go ahead and trace that body shape. Badunk. Still got my curves, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a very womanly body. Not that I wasn't womanly on the left, you know, but I'm looking pretty good. I'm not going to lie. All thanks to Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. It was interesting. I was talking to Dr. Ryan Coogan yesterday, and he was telling me that they are starting to get people who did the weight loss drugs and then gained the weight back and are now coming to them, saying I should have just done this to begin with. And, you know, one of the things about Eastside is it's not for everyone. I think every weight loss program is, you know, it's going to work for different people. This does require quite a commitment on the front end for the first 60 days. You do have to follow a pretty strict diet that's designed to restart your metabolism, reset it. But there's no, like, prepackaged meals you have to buy. You can make food at home. You can find things that you can eat out and about. So to me, I liked it because I like structure. So if I have to play some guessing game about how I'm going to lose weight, I'm not going to lose weight. But if you just tell me, here's exactly what you do for 60 days and you can lose like 20 to 30 pounds, I'm like, okay, I'll do that. I'll just treat it like a job and I'll buckle down. 60 days went by super fast. After I got past like the first 11 days, which were tough, after that, it was like easy. It just became part of my life. And I lost 30 pounds in 60 days. So you see the weight coming off so quickly that it really gives you an incentive to continue. And then if I ever commit a crime and someone traces my body shape to use against me, now I know that the body shape tracing is going to be good. Or if I die, how like if you die, they draw chalk around you?
Yeah.
Do they still do that or is that just in the movies?
I think that's in the 80s, but
okay, got it. Eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Okay, we do have to talk about The View in our closing sanity check. I try to avoid it as much as possible, but there was just too much bad/good stuff to talk about. Comments. Matt Gilbert, our friend Matt Gilbert, had some funny texts I exchanged with Matt last night. Probably shouldn't. Not going to share. I accidentally posted something I didn't intend to post and then deleted it, but Matt was fast.
Quick.
It's not like it was a nude or anything. I don't take nudes. $10 super chat. Since there's no show tomorrow, we have to celebrate the anniversary of... Oh, Matt, I hate you. We have to celebrate the anniversary of Brandy saying that Juneteenth is more important than the 4th of July. At least Nicole is getting the day off this year. Yeah. I mean, Nicole, you get Juneteenth off tomorrow. I want to let you know.
Thanks. Yeah. I didn't even plan a trip around it.
Oh, man, I feel bad. I'm sure that this time tomorrow, Nicole will have a trip planned. There is not
I might have looked at a flight.
But. I know it already. Yes. A couple years ago, I did a segment saying that Juneteenth is more important than the 4th of July. I regret a lot of shit I've said, right? I don't think I regret that because I think the premise of it is still sound, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in case you weren't blessed with seeing that amazing segment, my argument is this. Like, America's about freedom, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we celebrate on the 4th of July. It's like our freedom from tyranny. But, like, we celebrate that even though all Americans didn't even know they were free until the last of the slaves were freed in Galveston. So to me, if I'm looking at the significance of, because obviously you can't celebrate America being this beacon of freedom and hope during slavery, right? Because like that is so contrary to who we are as a country. Like how can we be like the country of free men if we have men in chains? So that kind of rules that out. So to me, the date when every single American was truly free, I think is a more significant historical moment.
But would they have had the chance to be free had there not been the 4th of July?
Than the Declaration of Independence?
We declared
our independence and then we still had slaves. Like, yeah. That's kind of messed up.
Right. But if you,
it was all independence for
all
some.
All of it makes America. It makes America. I'm just saying, for them to become, you know, fully American and be free, all these things had to happen, and then that, I guess. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, we declared independence for like some of us, and then others were
slaves. I'm just trying to make it.
Oh, I bet you the chat is popping off on me right now. But you get what I'm saying? I love this country. I love freedom. Slavery was horrible. And it's hard to even imagine a time when we enslaved human beings. And then we celebrated this wonderful country and our freedom from tyranny and the Declaration of Independence. Well, we still got slaves that you're like whipping and beating and forced labor. You know what I mean? So, you know what, Matt? I'm gonna double down. I still think it's a more significant moment. Wow, I'm gonna get a lot of crap for that. I love that Matt gave me $10 to try to diss me. Right. You know? Only Matt. Another Matt. Mac Stakalek. Extra hard on these Antifa types with some Papa Woody treatment in Walla Walla, Shelton, or Monroe. I don't get it. Papa Woody.
I don't know. Papa Woody treatment.
Many of us had absolutely no choice that actually was fair, so we were forced to take it in to keep our jobs. So talking about the vaccine. Also, faking card was punishable with a huge fine, while Inslee laughed, saying we had a choice. Bill Biz, $20 Super Chat. Seattle leadership justifies SPD inaction with the intention of not escalating a conflict. Yeah, ridiculous. Violent behavior is already an escalation and necessitates an aggressive SPD response. And that is interesting. Like, SPD will be like, oh, you know, let's just let them tucker themselves out because their presence tends to escalate something. But like, you know, that just shows how violent the mob is. If police showing up escalates their conduct, that's even more of a reason to put an end to their conduct. Let's see, Greg, that is not misdemeanor assault. That is felony assault, plain and simple. He was on the ground and defending himself and not retaliating, talking about Cam Higbee. When a person is knocked to the ground, the aggressor should stop. If he continues the attack, that is felony assault. No, I agree that Cam's is a felony assault. I think at first they were looking at it as a misdemeanor assault, but some other elements they think rise to the level of a felony. Buzz Brown. The party wanting no kings is a socialist oligarchy that doesn't give one shit about you. They only want your tax dollars. Yeah, they want your tax dollars to prop up their little life where they can work 4 hours a week at a Starbucks and then go riot the rest of the week. And then they want to suck off the public teat. I say no. Sandy W., I know a woman on the board of PIC. The Trump administration had already pulled their funding, which cut their services in half. Now WAW cut the other half of their funding. Just want to set the record straight here. I'm sickened by both sides of the aisle. I didn't know that the Trump administration cut some of their funding.
Right, I didn't know that specifically. But I do see, I do know a lot of programs like that because they can be publicly funded and they already had some public funds. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of those, the federal funds ended up getting cut from those. But that still leaves the opportunity to just raise more, which would be fine from the state as well. Like when I first saw this, I was like, well, at least I can publicly fund. I mean, yeah. That's an easy cause for people to get on board with, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the fact that they canceled the contract that right. now they can't even get the kids that they, the babies that they want yeah. to help because they've canceled the contract. So I think that it's more disappointing from a state's view because they are cutting the funding and the contract.
Well, there's also an element of priorities, right? So what priorities. Are you funding while you're not funding that? And again, mm-hmm. there's a laundry list of things that the state of Washington is continuing to fund, even in this budget crisis, that are clearly not even comparable with continuing to fund PIC. But mm-hmm. that being said, Sandy, I will look into why the Trump administration specifically cut funding to PIC and what the rationale mm-hmm. was for that. Stacy, I stopped trying to understand the left's reasoning. I will never understand it. Most are just narcissistic power junkies, and they want the publicity. E, having worked security for graduations whilst I was in college, the UW allowed the sign to be displayed. Nothing happens without security and officials knowing during a ceremony. She's graduated now. They won't do a thing. I tend to agree with you. Like, mm-hmm. she's totally off the hook for it. Cynthia Martin, $5 super chat, straight to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Straight to jail. Probably talking about my Antifa attackers. Papa yes. Woody asks, what about Miranda, Brandy?
Getting the day off.
Oh, Miranda always has the day off.
She has whatever day she wants off.
The only day she technically must work is Thursday. So, oh, Miranda has the day off tomorrow, too.
She does okay. too.
Yeah, well, we kind of had some confusion, actually, about what time an event was of mine yeah. tomorrow. So I thought I could initially do the show and then go to the event, but have since realized that I cannot do the show and then go to the event. So we just don't have a show tomorrow. Brother Abe, is that you, Abe Lincoln? In celebration of Nicole getting tomorrow off, $4.99 super chat.
Excited people are for me to have a day off. They're so nice.
You act like I like work her into the ground. It's a podcast. At the end, we do work a lot, but it is a lot, podcast at the end of the
but
day.
But yes, and it is.
And we always have a long weekend.
Work, but I just love the. So like, my eyes are like
do you guys think
right
I'm
now.
Evil?
My eyes right now.
Don't cry, Nicole. You're making.
I know. I look like I'm crying.
You're going to feed into this like belief that I'm evil.
That's probably why.
We have a long weekend every weekend. You know, we still have to work during it. You know, we have the Sunday show. But, yeah.
But yes, no, we have it good. We are not complaining about our jobs.
Yeah, no. I mean, I still like, you know, lose my mind every day. But then I just. You do a podcast mm-hmm. as a job. Calm down. I take it seriously. We take it seriously. So we'll take things very personally whenever there's, you know, anything that goes on. All right. With that, Nicole, thank you.
We're good.
Enjoy Juneteenth off.
Thank you.
Which I long in advance had planned mm-hmm. as an undivided holiday for the year 2025.
How about July 4th, too?
No, it's not as important.
It's a Friday.
Oh, okay. Great. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Okay, there are a couple of crazy clips of from The View going around. One of them I'm not even going to play because it was like Whoopi Goldberg trying to argue that living in Iran is like equal to or better than living in the United States, which is just nuts.
For gay people.
For gay people. She said, in the U.S., we've dragged gay people behind cars. It's like, all right, yeah, maybe like 80 years ago. And she talked about we had people in chains. And then whatever her name is, the like token kind of conservative was like, they'll throw gay people off the building in Iran today. They'll beat women to death today for wearing the wrong thing. And Whoopi Goldberg's just lost her mind. But The View had on Arnold Schwarzenegger. And of course, they were trying to get some soundbite from him about Donald Trump's evil immigration policy. And I think his answer was an unpleasant surprise for the ladies of The View.
You are an immigrant. You're an immigrant in this country.
Yeah.
Did you have a visceral reaction to what they're doing, what ICE is doing, when you see the videos of it?
Well, I tell you, you said that the immigrant, I'm so proud and happy mm-hmm. that I was embraced by the American people like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine I came over here with the age of 21, mm-hmm. with absolutely nothing. And then to create a career like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, in no other country in the world could you do that. Yeah. Every single thing, if it's my bodybuilding career, if it's my acting career, becoming governor, the beautiful family that I've created, all of this is because of America.
That's true.
And so this is why I'm so happy to see firsthand that this is the greatest country in the world.
I love it so
and
much.
This is the land of opportunity. I just think the world of the great kind of a history that we have with immigrants in America. But the key thing also is at the same time that we got to do things legal. That is the important thing, you know. Oh. So you got to do things legal. And those people that are doing illegal things in America, and they're the foreigners, they are not smart. Because when you come to America, you're a guest. Mm-hmm. And you have to behave like a guest. Like when I go to someone's house, and I'm a guest, then I will do everything I can to keep things clean and to make my bed and to do everything
really
that is the right
man.
Thing to do rather than committing a crime or being abusive or something like that. So that doesn't really work in this country. So I think the important thing is when you become an immigrant to think about, okay, I go to America because I want to use America for the great opportunities that America has in education, in jobs, creating a family, all of those kind of things. Then you have to think about, okay, if I get all of those things from America, then I have to give something back. You have a responsibility as an immigrant to give back to America and to pay back to America and to go and do something for your community for no money whatsoever. Give something back to after-school programs, Special Olympics, or whatever
the crowd
it is.
Applauded. Make they're not going to like that. They were so mad. They're like, oh, my God, we just take it back. Let's cut this part from the show. But, you know, what can they really say? Because he is an immigrant who came to this country, who found a lot of success here, who did things the right way, and who has given back to the country that has given him so much. That has been today's Sanity Check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, Brother Abe says, hashtag free Miranda. Miranda's free, baby. She's free. No one can hold Miranda down. A reminder, we will have no live show tomorrow. Well, no show at all. I shouldn't specify that way. Coming up on Sundays with subscribers, we know there's a lot of hand-wringing around the Seattle Police Department's response to riots, etc. What are they allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do? Can they help prosecute these people? So we're going to be joined by Mike Solon. He's the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, who's going to tell us how his officers are feeling about all of this and their expectation for what has already become the Summer of Love 2.0. If you have not signed up to support our show already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. Think about that. Think of all the things you buy for $5 without a second thought. You can fund our wonderful independent show, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Ta-ta.